Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken Petaluma, never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, farming, and more here on KRCB. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Hope you've had a nice weekend. Did you get out and enjoy farmers markets this weekend? I hope so. I went to two. I went to Santa Rosa at Wells Fargo and, of course, to my market, the Sebastopol Farmers Market, this morning. And one thing that's just so great, the greens are glorious right now. And some greens that we probably really haven't paid much attention to in a while, especially Brussels sprout leaves. They seem to be the new it leaf right now, and they're really good and really simple to cook, quick stir fry. There are mustard greens coming up now, and I saw the very first nettles of the year at the Sebastopol Farmers Market last week, and I made a nice nettle congee, which is just so good for you and so delicious, but so good for you for getting over one of the colds or viruses that's going around. We have some very special guests returning for the sixth time. I think it's the sixth time. We have Carl Brandhorst.
Brandhorst.
I always get you mixed up with Hagerhorst. Carl Hagerhorst.
Both German.
Yes. Carl Brandhorst, who is president of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. We have the vice president here, I think, for the first time. This year it is Grant Crandall, and we have also Annie Vercelli, who escorts these gentlemen around. They come every year at this time, and you come for some specific promotional events, right?
We come out for the Unified Wine and Grape Symposium, which is at Sacramento, the end of the January. Uh-huh. And this year we came down to do a presentation to about 100 students, people at Santa Rosa Junior College, covering East Coast wines.
Oh, great.
We had about 50 different wines to the group, and they really enjoyed some of the stuff. They said, we read about these, but we never get a chance to taste them, and so they had a chance to taste them.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. You had a big... This year you had a dinner, and you often have a luncheon, but this year you had a dinner last night. You want to tell us about that? What was the... If there was, like... the core of the meal, or maybe it was just nine equal courses.
I think it was nine equal courses. Yes,
oh, nice.
Each had an identity, and each went with several of the wines. We put about 18 wines on the table, and people could mix and match and try the various wines. So it was an evening full of good food, good wine, good people.
It sounds great. What were some of the pairings that you really enjoyed?
We had a zucchini crema torta, and that went really well with a la croissant. We had a croissant from New York and from Vermont. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting to have them side by side.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah.
And we should say, before we get into the wines, and we have eight wines to taste tonight.
We have wines tonight, yes.
We should define, or we should explain what the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association is. Everything touches the Atlantic except one state?
No, there's three states that don't touch it.
Okay.
We're concentrated on 17 states from Maine down to Florida. And for our association, we include Vermont, which doesn't touch the Atlantic, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania. They touch the Potomac, but they don't touch the Atlantic. But we go all the way down to Florida. So
I was
we have
thinking Vermont.
States.
I forgot those other two. Mm-hmm. Okay, so 17 states and all of them.
We work to have them join our competition. We're in our 11th year and try and promote their wines through educational things. Like we come out here, we do some educational things around our area. And for the competition, we are tied into the Congressional Wine Caucus. Your Congressman Mike Thompson here sponsors us for a room so we can give the awards to the awarding wineries, you know, having their congressmen give their awards to the wineries.
Nice.
Good publicity.
Yeah, excellent.
And it really, one of the few bipartisan things on the Hill these days.
Mm-hmm. Good. Wine is, if anything is bipartisan, it's got to be wine. Mm-hmm. And that region is known not just for the varietals that we might recognize that, you know, originated in Europe. You have a lot of native.
We have native American varietals, you had like Norton Fredonia, Diamond, and then we have a lot of hybrids, as Anne mentioned here, La Croissant, which is up in Vermont. Frontenac, Marquette, these things were all developed for the cold climate. You know, they will survive down to minus 25, minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas vinifer does not survive down that far.
Interesting. Well, why don't we start tasting?
Okay.
And why don't you tell us what we're going to taste first?
Okay, the first wine we have here is an Albarino. It's from Ingleside Winery in Virginia.
We're doing all Virginia tonight,
The theme this evening, Michelle, is Virginia wine from all parts of the Commonwealth.
Okay.
But the first one here is Ingleside. It's on the northern neck, which is east of Richmond. It's on the land that juts out into the Chesapeake, and it's actually the home territory of George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And Ingleside is the largest winery in that particular area. But this is an award-winning Albarino.
And it's a varietal. A few people are growing it here. It's a varietal that I have always really liked. Okay. Love that sound. Okay, I want you to talk about it.
It's very aromatic. Very scented. It's very crisp. It's really great with seafood. And in this neck of the woods, that northern neck, it's surrounded on three sides by water. So, I mean, seafood is very common down there. It really fits in with...
Yeah, really fits. One thing I notice compared to the Albarinos I've tasted from here, it's more floral.
It is more floral.
And it has more high notes.
Mm-hmm. If you get the Albarino from Rio Ayes in Spain, it's a little more crisp, a little more acidic. This is a little rounder.
It's a little rounder. It's a little more floral. But it's still really crisp and bright on the palate with some very pleasing lemony things that, you know, makes me want crab. Really makes me want crab. This is lovely. What does it sell for?
Grant, do you know what that sells for?
I think it's about 18.
Okay. And this is 2014 vintage. I like this a great deal. I think Joey likes it too.
I move.
Exactly. Okay, and our next one is...
Okay, our next one is another white here. This is Vermentino. This is from Barbersville Winery, which is right around Charlottesville. We all know Charlottesville because of Monticello, the home of Thomas Jefferson. Vermentino is an Italian variety that you see in Liguria or in Sardinia. This is fitting because the winemaker here at Barbersville is Luca Pacina, who's probably one of the top winemakers in the state.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in October of last year, he was just awarded the Order of Merit by the Italian government for all the work that he contributes to the wine industry worldwide. So this is a Vermentino.
And this is another one that will be familiar to local wine drinkers because we have a couple producers. I know there's Davvero. I was just reading about another local producer. Waiting for that cork. There we go.
This particular winery is a bit larger than the average on the East Coast. Most of the East Coast wineries are really quite small.
Mm-hmm.
But in volume total, it's gotten considerably larger. You have the three biggest producers, of course, here on the West Coast in terms of California, Washington, Oregon, but number four is New York and number five is Virginia. So the industry's really grown pretty substantially, and this is one of the larger and longer established wineries in Virginia.
What is identifiable, Mark, for the Vermentino is that little bit of herbalness in the background. And as I said, the home area geographically for Vermentino is Sardinia or Liguria, which, you know, right around Genoa and so forth. But this is, Luca has done a very nice job here. This is only, I think, the second vintage for his Vermentino. And so it's got some years to go.
Do we know the price on this?
Yes, the Vermentino is 23.
It's an absolutely lovely white. Can I ask the alcohol on it? Where did the bottle go?
Just a moment. We'll retrieve the bottle.
Okay. Don't knock that over.
Maybe I'll mention as we're waiting for that, that many times folks on the West Coast are not as familiar with the wines, and the write-ups in the national magazines have been less common, but it started to be the case that Wine Spectator and Wine Advocate and Wine Enthusiast have been doing ratings. And this particular winery in the June issue of this past year had their Cab Franc rated 92, their Malvasia Pasito at 93, their Nebbiolo Reserve at 92, their Bordeaux blend, which is Octagon, at 91, and their Sangiovese Reserve at 92. So a lot of nice scores, if that sort of thing makes a difference to you.
It looks like it's about 12.5 alcohol.
Okay. I was going to say, it's not high. I mean, we've got so many over 14 in California that you can tell this is a little lower, and that's very nice. It makes it very, very food friendly, I think, when the alcohol is just a little bit lower. You don't have to grapple with that perception of heat and almost sometimes sweetness if it gets, you know, too high.
The interesting thing about Barbersville was the winery was founded in 1976 when Zanin from Italy came over and bought land and decided to grow something. Zanin was famous for his Lambrusco, which you probably remember in about the 1970s.
Oh, I remember Lambrusco. Actually, I just had some the other night.
But I mean, they've been very supportive, and they try different varieties, and it's really one of the top wineries in Virginia.
Yeah, really lovely. I like this. I like both of these so far really a great deal.
Well, I'm hoping that the next one you'll like probably even more. Viognier. This is going to be from Veritas, which is in a little bit south of Barbersville, a little bit south of Monticello.
And you've brought some Veritas before.
We brought Veritas before. Andrew Hodson is the owner, and his daughter now is the winemaker there. He's a former brain surgeon from England. Somehow he ended up over here. We don't quite know how it all happened. But Viognier is Viognier was introduced into Virginia by Dennis Horton back when in the 70s, and He got it growing, because at that time there was only about 300 acres in the world, and all in the Rhone Valley.
Oh,
but now
really?
We've got it all over the place, and it does very well in Virginia here.
It's actually recognized as the official white wine of the state because it's so prevalent at this point.
Oh, really?
Point.
Yes. Interesting, interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to be very curious to see
how
this...
Now, there's not going to be any pop on this, because this is the only
screw
one
cap.
We have screw tap on this one here.
They finally figured out how to make... I remember one of the first columns I wrote when I started writing my wine pairing column. I got an email from somebody ripping me to shreds because I didn't go into the benefits of a screw cap. It was a screw cap wine.
Right.
The screw cap was so hard to take off. I couldn't get it. I tried, you know, those, what are they, the things that crack?
The grip.
Crap,
yes.
Yeah, I tried that. I tried a nutcracker. I felt like I was standing on the
They've come a long way.
Yeah, it was so hard. And I said, first of all, that's not what I do. That would be the person writing about the wine.
Right.
I mean, about the winery. But second of all, you know, I almost had to shoot it off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've gotten much better.
They've gotten much better
much
here.
Better.
And they do allow a little bit of air in there, you know, like just like the cork does.
Right.
They got very sophisticated on
this.
So this was, let's see if we can.
There we go. Oh, that's a nice sound, too.
So this is Veritas Viognier. This is their 2014.
And I remember there, I can't remember what the magazine is, but quite some time ago, I did a magazine article for a couple of people who needed someone. They were the publishers, and they needed somebody to write about Viognier pairing. And I did wild salmon with mango salsa.
Ah.
And that was it. Go that with the California Viognier, that went really well.
Well, I think we're a little more scented and a little more rounder than what you do out here. We got a little more body too.
A little more body, yeah. But you have a little less. I don't want to offend anyone in California, but you have a little less of something that I don't care for in local Viognier or in Northern California Viognier. There's something that I find a little cloying about it, and this is not cloying.
This is not cloying. No, you got good acidity here. Good balance on this. And the alcohol in his is 13.7, and you wouldn't think it's with that high.
No, I wouldn't have thought that. That's lovely, and that's I wouldn't necessarily have to go with something on the sweet side, say the mango salsa,
right,
to do a pairing. This is a pretty food-friendly Viognier. And that's interesting. There were only 300 acres in the world.
I think back at one time, yes, and it was all in the Rhone Valley.
Mm-hmm. It's used to oddly boost the color of red wines.
Yes, it's sometimes with Syrah.
Yeah,
it's added to Syrah.
Yeah, Russian Hill Winery, mm-hmm, which, you know, lovely people, Ellen Mack. And Ed, and I'm going to forget the winemaker's name, who's Ed's nephew. They make a lovely Syrah, and they add that
about
was 5%, yeah,
5 or 6% is all.
It makes the color more vibrant.
Right? They do that, in France too, for the same reason. I kind of think.
So this is really quite a nice Viognier.
Yeah, I think, you know, this certainly you could use with fish, or you said you used your pairing was with salmon.
It was with salmon, mm-hmm, and mango salsa, but I think you could go with pork.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
easily go with pork. Right. You could also, it would be beautiful with do a pure parsnip soup,
mm-hmm,
a puree of parsnips with. You do something in brown butter, saute something, maybe even baby scallops in brown butter and put them on top of the parsnip soup. That would be lovely.
Yes, we had a few Viogniers at Anne's dinner on the other evening.
What were the Viogniers with?
Butternut soup.
Okay, yeah. And that's, you know, that's a kissing cousin with parsnip soup. That really rich, earthy, slightly sweet flavor. Yeah, that would be really good. And this one I am going to tip into the bucket. And now we're on our fourth white.
We're on our fourth wine. Now, we've done vinifera up to this point.
Right.
But what we do, certainly in our regional area from Maine down to Florida, we have a lot of Native Americans. We have a lot of hybrids. And we do a lot of hybrids in Virginia. I think about out of 300 acres, about 600 are for hybrids. All the rest are for vinifera down there. What we have here is a wine called Vidal Blanc, which is a French-American hybrid developed in the late 1800s, 1890s. Mm-hmm. And this is from Stanburn Winery, which is down almost on the North Carolina border in the southern part of the state here.
Now, the reason for the development of the hybrids on the East Coast initially was to...
Oh, that was a good one.
Sorry. To deal with two problems. In the northern part, it's because it's so cold, and the hybrids had to take care of that problem. And, mm-hmm, and throughout the east, there's a higher amount of humidity, and the pests and disease problems are significant. And so the hybridization dealt with that.
Okay.
Now we've reduced to the point where it's only about 20% of the market on the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
The rest is vinifera.
I've wondered how humidity would impact grape growing or growing of anything. Cause
an awful lot of spraying in Virginia because of the humidity. Not so much this past year because of the ups and downs in the weather, but on a normal year, we probably spray three times as much as you spray out here.
And what do you use?
Now that I don't know.
Okay. So we are Vidal Blanc. Vidal Blanc. Tell us about, if you know, the source of the name.
Well, Vidal, the Frenchman.
Did I miss that?
No,
you were telling me?
No,
yes.
I wasn't telling you that. No, but that was, it's a Frenchman. I think Jean Vidal, something on that, developed back there in the late 1890s. But this is a dry.
Well, that's a nice wine,
That's a very interesting wine, I think, yes.
That is lovely.
The interesting thing with Vidal Blanc Michelle, is you can either do it dry like this, mm-hmm. or you can do it on the sweet side.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. You know, the Canadians up in the Niagara Peninsula do a lot of ice wine.
Yes.
Most of it is Vidal Blanc.
Oh, really? Okay, because I've had ice wine. It's been quite a long time, mm-hmm. but I did a show on ice wine and had some beautiful examples.
Oh, yeah.
So it's mostly Vidal Blanc.
Up in Canada, of course, in Germany, it's Riesling.
Uh-huh.
The Canadians will add some Riesling to it sometime. Uh-huh. That extends the life, the bottle uh-huh. life of oh, it, okay. if you add some Riesling.
This is really good. I forgot on the Viognier. Do we know what the Viognier sells for?
Yeah, the Viognier is 22.
Okay, and
this Vidal Blanc is 16.
16, okay. 16, 18, okay. So far, this is my favorite. I really like this. Annie, what did you, when you tasted this wine, what sort of process did you go through in deciding how to pair it?
Something that would really showcase both the wine and the food mm-hmm. in terms of contrast or comparing that would be similar.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, with the Vidal Blancs we had last night, I did with the hors d'oeuvre. So it would be, we had a gorgonzola cream profiterole, a little pizzerette, and the acid balance okay. went really well.
Yeah. This is my style of white wine. The acid is really beautiful. It's bone dry. It is really lovely.
This is also another female winemaker here, a woman originally from Virginia, Jocelyn Kozelka, but she actually went to Australia, University of Adelaide, for her degree in oenology, and has been back to Virginia the last decade or uh-huh. so. And she not only produces wine, this winery, but also consults with a number of others in the area.
Uh-huh, interesting. You know, that's a whole other show. Women winemakers versus male winemakers, because we actually have very different palates.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, women palates are typically more sensitive, and it's because of evolution, and
that's
because
correct.
We had to sense all the subtleties so that we wouldn't poison the babies we were carrying.
Or yourself.
Or ourselves. But yeah, there's that, you know, like mm-hmm. the aversion to bitterness during pregnancy, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be, it is interesting to see the different directions.
Right. Oh, you certainly find that out in judging.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Definitely find that out in judging.
Definitely. I used to judge a lot, and I've fallen off the, you know, no one calls me anymore, and it's great. I keep my head down because judging wines is extremely difficult work. So difficult. I have never, ever been on a panel with another woman.
Oh, I was just on the panel with the San Francisco Chronicle,
uh-huh.
which Anne here works on the back room.
Uh-huh.
This year they had 7,128 entries.
Oh.
And so they had to go to panel. Instead of panels of five, they went to panels of three. Okay. So I had two women on my panel. One was Sean Rosenblum mm-hmm. of Rockwall, and she was sharp. She was really sharp. She knows what she's talking about.
Well,
she's a winemaker and as a judge.
Yeah, I was on panels of either five or seven, and I was always the only woman. And it's very different.
I think it's changed now.
Yeah, it's been a good 10 years. Why don't we take a little musical break now that we're halfway through? We'll be right back with more wines.
Calgary in the sand. dreams. Is this not the way it seems? Purple words on gray background. To be a woman and to be turned down. Oh, enough now to change your name. When so many love you, is it the same? It's the woman in you that makes you wanna play.
You're listening to Mouthful, of course. My guest this evening, Carl Brenhorst, president of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, vice president Grant Crandall, and their minder, the person who takes care of them every January when they come to the West Coast, Annie Ruccelli, who you know for many, many reasons. Annie Ruccelli is an institution in herself. One of these days, we have to just concentrate on you and all that you do in Sonoma County, Annie. We're going to, before we start tasting the reds, we're going to talk about something that you've added, and it seems to be happening all over the country, and I think it's a great thing, and that is cideries and meaderies.
Well, certainly. It's we run a competition. As I mentioned earlier, we run a competition mm-hmm. on just the regional wines. We're the largest competition focusing on East Coast wine.
Mm-hmm. There are others?
Yes, well, that don't focus exclusively on East Coast wines. You have the International Finger Lakes one, which has, they're international. They do all the wines from the United States, but they don't just concentrate just strictly on East Coast wines. We just concentrate strictly on East Coast wines because a lot of the hybrids and Native Americans get lost in the shuffle. People don't appreciate that because everyone's tied into Cabernet or Chardonnay or Petite Syrah or something like that. Anyway, so we finished our 11th year here last year, and this is the first time we've included meaderies and hard cider in the competition because it's really a big thing on the East Coast, certainly the fruit wines up in the northern part, but ciders in New York and ciders and meaderies in Virginia, and we're getting a few up in North Carolina. But it's giving the Virginia Alcohol and Beverage Control Board fits because they're trying to figure out how it fits into the legal laws, and so they're treating them all as wineries.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
And can you say anything about any of the specific ones? Tell me, especially, I think cideries, especially in Sonoma County, hard cider is not a mystery. Mm-hmm. You know, we have several hard cider producers. You can go into almost any market these days and buy, it's like, oh my gosh, which one do I decide? There's so many. There's a lot of them. But meaderies, not so much. So let's explain what a meadery is.
Well, you're talking about mead, which is, a drink that goes back, a couple of thousand years.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Since we just got started this year receiving them, because of the people calling us and saying, hey, we'd like to be included and so forth, I don't know exactly all the ones by names. I just know that there's a whole bunch out there.
And what it is it's wine made from honey, correct?
Oh, yes. The meadery. Yes. Wine made from honey, right.
Yes, it's made from honey, and that doesn't mean it's necessarily sweet.
Not necessarily, but it also has different flavors depending upon where the bees collect the...
Exactly. And we have one, I only know of one up here. It's out in Point Reyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've tasted, and their ciders are their meads are quite good. Mm-hmm. But if you read, you know, if you're a student of English literature, during the, say, Thomas Hardy period, they're often drinking mead. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was studying in graduate school, you know, mead just seemed like this ancient drink you might encounter if you went back in time, but not in current history. So it's really great to see that it's coming back. And the same with ciders, you know.
Especially ciders, yes. Yeah. It's a little easier than meads.
Right, I mean,
you have many more apple varieties that you can work with.
Exactly.
You have to have specific apple varieties, not the kind you buy in the store.
Right. And
they don't give you the acidity that you need.
Yeah, and, you know, Johnny Appleseed wasn't planting all apple trees for table. Planting apple trees for cider. And mm-hmm. that was, I was just talking to a class that I'm teaching that, you know, that was what everyone drank for a while.
In the early colonies.
Kids. Yeah. Because the water wasn't necessarily safe mm-hmm. because they didn't have all the water treatment. But cider was safe. So you might have a mug of cider before, you know, you went to school when you were 5 years old. It was very common.
Well, we're glad to see them coming back, and
yes.
I'm glad that we've entered them in the competition. We also do the Virginia Wine Festival, which is now in its 40th year, our association does.
Oh, really?
Yes, and we've had one or two hard ciders at the festival for the first
when
time.
When is the Virginia Wine Festival?
We do it normally in September.
Festival in September? Oh, nice.
And so we've had one or two this year. We expect more.
Uh-huh.
Because they're really getting popular.
Yeah.
Up and down the East Coast.
It's a great development, I think. It's a really great development. And there's something, I don't know, there's something very democratic. And I mean that with a small D, mm-hmm. not a capital D. There's something just very democratic about cider.
Well, I'm glad to see some of those apple varieties, you know, that are very rare almost, mm-hmm. you know, reason for their existence.
Yeah. Do you know if there's a lot of plantings? Are they using older orchards or new orchards going in?
I don't know the specifics on uh-huh. that, but I mean, you know, you have to wait for these trees to get a certain age.
Sure.
And so I think they're probably new plantings.
Yeah, most of the older usage in terms of the original trees is being done in New York. There's a really vibrant uh-huh. cider community there, uh-huh. and they are trying to use as much in the way of the old
That's great.
Plantings as
yeah.
possible.
Yeah, one of the things we're seeing here in Sonoma County is, of course, there's Gravenstein cider, but there's other ciders using the existing trees, which is great because it means they won't be taken out to make room for more vineyards. But we're also seeing some of the successful cideries are putting in cider apple orchards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, anything that sort of continues biodiversity, I think, is a really great thing.
Well, that's what you're seeing by seeing these cider varieties
yeah.
coming back in vogue.
Yes, it's a great thing. And now it's time to expand to red wines.
Okay, we have four red wines from Virginia here. The first one is from Paradise Springs, which is probably the closest winery to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Clifton, which is right next door to Fairfax. And this is a family whose land grant goes back to the 1700s. They've been around a long time. Right.
But nice.
This is a Cabernet Franc from Paradise Springs. It's the Wiles family. It's the Wiles family.
It has a really beautiful color.
Well, this is Cabernet Franc, Michelle. And I really believe that in the Mid-Atlantic region, mm-hmm. in, you know, parts of Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Virginia, and Maryland, that the Cabernet Franc really is the top grape, top red grape,
uh-huh.
rather, with Petit Verdot, and we have one of those this evening,
mm-hmm.
coming along but right behind it. The Cabernet Sauvignons are not, you know, fall a little bit behind it, but they're
now,
so
is
good.
That because it takes a long time for a Cabernet Sauvignon to ripen?
No, I don't think that's the case.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the soil.
Oh, the soil, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Well, this is actually lovely. I'm used to Cabernet Franc being a little
Inkier. More fruity. Well,
and inkier.
You get more fruit out here.
Uh-huh.
If you take a look at the home in the Loire region, you get a very kind of earthy Cabernet Franc.
Right.
In Chenon and so forth.
Uh-huh.
You guys get, out here in California, in the West Coast, you get more kind of fruit.
Yeah,
we get a combination of those. We get a combination of both those. It adds more complexity.
I like the earthy quality a great deal.
Exactly. And you see that kind of influence because so many of the winemakers on the East Coast look, frankly, to Europe for their inspiration, mm-hmm. and get their training and go move back and forth. So mm-hmm. you have a different set of influences, and I think they tend to emulate uh-huh. the European styles yeah.
well,
more.
This is a really lovely style. This is a lovely wine. I mm-hmm. really I want a dress out of this color. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what's the price on this?
Let's see.
And this, we should say, this is a 2014 vintage.
Right, it's $28.
$28.
Mm-hmm. He's got good acidity. It's, you know, mm-hmm. the tannins are not over the top.
No, they're not.
And the balance between the acidity yeah. and the fruit is right in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really beautifully balanced. It's a very accessible wine.
The folks who run this winery are also beginning. Have already purchased and are beginning the development of a winery in Santa Barbara as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're invading your territory.
Uh-oh. What are they going to do down in Santa Barbara, do you know?
I think they're mainly focusing on Chard and Pinot Noir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pinot Noir from that region is really lovely. Mm-hmm. Really, really nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so bye-bye Cabernet Franc.
Okay, the next one we have on the agenda here. One of the things we do very well in there are these Bordeaux blends.
Mm-hmm.
And using all five varieties, but most, you know, sometimes it's just the Cab Sav, Cab Franc, the Merlot, and the Petit Verdot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have a Malbec and so mm-hmm. forth. But this is Muse, which is a very new winery, small winery.
And it's the name of the wine is Clio.
Clio, right, which is it?
C-L-I-O.
C-L-I-O.
Proprietary name.
Proprietary name.
Yeah, this is on some land that's been farmed for eons, and the house that's still there and is used as part of the winery was from 1792, although it's just recently been developed as a wine growing area.
And what's the price?
The Clio is $35. And what you do see in this one, which is representative of the East Coast, is you have a little bit lower proportion of Cab and Merlot. This is an equal proportion of Cab Franc, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Petit Verdot.
Oh, interesting.
And you don't typically see that
right,
on the West Coast.
No.
And you will see Cab Franc and Petit Verdot in higher proportions on the East Coast typically.
Mm-hmm. So to add more of that earthy quality.
Right.
This has a beautiful nose.
This is the 2010. The 2009 was judged the top wine in Virginia.
Which one was?
This wine, the Clio. This wine was judged the top wine in the entire state. There's a state competition.
This particular one.
This particular one.
Right.
No, not this. That's
not
what
this
I'm
vintage.
Saying.
Okay.
Yeah, this is 2010. It was 2009 that was awarded.
Every year now, we have a competition mm-hmm. just for Virginia wines. It's called the Governor's Cup mm-hmm. competition. And it goes on for a couple, you know, a week or so. And the top 12 wines, a case of each of those goes into the Governor's Wine Cellar for official business.
Business.
Absolutely. So it's really, we have about 255 wineries in the state right now. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get up to 200 of those wineries entering the competition to see if they can get into the Governor's Cellar for state events. Because that's very good publicity for the winery.
Absolutely.
And this is a very small winery here.
Uh-huh. Annie, talk to me about this and your food pairings.
This would go really good. Last night we had a braised pork butt with a really nice brown sauce, a reduction of a red wine, which I used in making the sauce.
Uh-huh.
And this went really well because it cut through the richness of the pork. Mm-hmm. It had braised a long time. It was really rich, fork tender, and there was a really good balance of it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. This is an extremely sophisticated wine, and I use that word, and that's a compliment.
One of the owners of the winery, the wife, I can't remember her name right now, is a former ambassador to Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, wow!
Down in the Caribbean, kind of thing.
Yeah, so. This is lovely. This is I would put this alongside pretty much any classic red wine.
We seem to do the, as I said earlier, I think, you know, the Cabernet Franc is a single varietal, is one of the best that we do in the Mid-Atlantic region. But these Bordeaux blends really do also pop up.
Yeah, this is really, really beautiful.
Okay.
I hate to put it in the dump bucket, but that's what you have to do.
I know, you have to do that, right. Okay. This next one here, I think, is going to be, have you ever heard of Tannat?
Only from you.
Oh, okay. Well, Tannat, you know, historically comes from the Cahors region in southern France. And it's really big and tannic. But it we grow it in Virginia here. Again, I got to take my hat off to some of the winemakers there, like Dennis Horton, who's brought in new stuff. And it doesn't come out as quite as strong as that. The country of Uruguay is trying to make it its national grape.
Oh, really?
The Tannat down there.
Interesting.
This is a Tannat from Fabiola Wineries, which is up in the northern part of Virginia. Mm-hmm. We have, as I said, we have over 255 wineries in Virginia, and there's two major areas of concentration. Up there on the northern part, right around Leesburg, bordering on the bordering on the Maryland side, and then right around Charlottesville, which is the home, of course, Monticello and so forth. You know, you got 40, 45, maybe 50 wineries within a 20, 30-mile radius there. But the only, otherwise they're spread throughout the state.
Yeah, Tannat is becoming quite popular in our area. It grows well, and it's an ancient vinifera, but it had really gotten to the point where there was not much production worldwide, and then Uruguay took it on, and now we have, and so there's a conference, sort of a federation of the producers in it, originally just always met in France, and then it alternated between France and Uruguay, and now it alternates between France, Uruguay, and Virginia.
Oh, interesting. Uruguay, that's like the third time Uruguay has come up in conversation lately.
Oh, really? Yeah. What were the other two times?
Oh, conversations about where to go if certain people became president. And there were a few people voting for Uruguay.
The nice thing here, I mean, you've got the acidity and you've got the body, and you have some tannins, but it's not. If you've had one from the Cahors, you know, it takes the enamel off your teeth.
You know, it sounds to me like it must be similar to Alicante Boucher, because people say, well, you drink it or you paint your barn with it.
Well, that's, Alicante Boucher is, you know, usually it to enhance the color of a lot of wine. But I think this has more than that. I mean, it's certainly dark, very dark.
It doesn't translate onto the palate as dark as it is in the glass. It's actually I can't drink Alicante Boucher. It's the tannins are just too rough for me.
Well, you probably couldn't drink one from Cahors or from France.
Yeah, probably not. This is actually really nice.
Yeah.
It's got a nice earthy depth.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do with this, Annie?
This just has a great depth of flavor, and it has a long, lingering finish.
Yeah.
Very balanced. It lasts a long time. So with this, it went with a pasta dish, and so it went really well with the tomato-based sauce.
Okay, I can definitely see that. It makes me I would like to have some goat picadillo right now. I've been making, we have fabulous goat in Sonoma County, and I spent this last year making a lot of picadillo, which is, what would we call it, you know? It's almost like a more traditional version of sloppy joe. It's not sweet, but it's ground beef, and it's got, you know, you add some wine when you're cooking it, maybe some potatoes, some other vegetables, some stock. And it's just really earthy and rich when you make it. You can make it with any meat, but I love making it with our local goat, and this would be fabulous with it. Absolutely excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Most of the wineries on the East Coast, you know, we target, for our competition, you have to grow the grapes in the 17 state areas. And there's only about 950 wineries on the East Coast there that meet our criteria that we always aim for our competition. And a lot of them are small. I mean, 50,000 cases is large on the East Coast. Most of them are very small. So you don't find these wines in general distribution.
Right.
I think, you know, we have Barbersville in Virginia out here, and I think Constantine Frank in New York, which makes excellent Rieslings and Pinot Noirs, are out here. But most of the other people, you're going to have to get them directly from, if you're interested in these wines.
You go directly to the winery.
Go directly to the winery.
Wine clubs,
wine,
that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Wine clubs.
And I think, you know, you don't require a license for importing wines from other states in California,
right,
like some of the other states do.
Yes.
So, I mean, you're certainly open. People mm-hmm. are certainly willing to ship.
What is the price on this one?
Let's see. this one is $36.
Mm-hmm. Worth every penny. It's really,
oh, yes.
It's really beautiful.
Doug Fabiola and Fabiola Cellars, where this is made, learned his trade out here and then returned to Virginia and set it up. And his big concern right now is that we don't train enough for people working in the vineyards. So he's working with other wineries up there, setting up a college program. I think it's called the Piedmont Culinary Institute, so there could be some training for people to work in the wineries and in the fields
and
the vineyards too.
Oh, okay.
So
interesting.
He's super sustainable guy.
Uh huh. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've got one left.
You have one more to go. This is a new winery in Virginia. The first one, I think this is appropriate because the first one was down on the Northern Neck, Ingleside, which is just as you come in from the Northern Neck from Richmond. But one a little further down is General's Ridge, which is in the center part of the Northern Neck. And this is a Petit Verdot. I mentioned earlier that, you know, Cabernet Franc was one of the grapes that we do well mm-hmm. in the Mid-Atlantic region, but Petit Verdot is really starting to show and blossom. You know, it's a single varietal. Most people do it in the past, certainly out here, do it as a blend.
Exactly. I'm not used to single
blend,
varietal.
But this is a single
Petit
varietal
Verdot
here.
Well, that's right. In France, it's often added primarily to enhance color. Mm-hmm. And in small amounts to do that. It's definitely not the case on the East Coast here. They've mm-hmm. seemed to develop some depth and have it as a single varietal pretty commonly.
It's definitely got a depth of color. Before I taste it, I want to hear, Annie, what you do with it at the table or in the kitchen.
This would go really good with the staple of polenta. Polenta with tomato sauce, polenta. Last night I made a polenta terrine with a garnish of a little pesto, and it would go really well with that.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I, of course, love polenta.
This particular winery recommends portobello mushroom.
Ah, so I could do a portobello mushroom ragu over polenta. There you go.
You've got that firm acidity, but it's got that underlying smoothness, which often doesn't come along with acidity.
Yeah.
Nice berry flavors, you know.
Oh, this is love. This is nothing like the other Petit Verdot. There's no rough tannins.
Yes.
And that's been one of the themes through all four of these red wines. There's no rough tannins.
On the Tannat, the Fabiola, which you had previously mm-hmm. to this, which is known for tannins most of the places mm-hmm. in the world. It's there, but they're just, you know,
and is it
subdued.
Is it the soil? Is it when you harvest?
No, I don't think it's when you harvest.
Okay,
I think
it's
probably the soil.
That's interesting. That's really
they're doing studies. The state is very supportive. We have a state enologist, Tony Wolf, if you want to know where to grow grapes, and Bruce Auckland, if you want to know how to make wine, just down in Virginia Tech. You can talk with these people, and they help you get started. That's why we've gone from two wineries in 1972 to over 255 today.
Interesting. For people who live in Virginia or people who are visiting, do most of the wineries have tasting rooms?
Yes.
Okay, they do.
They
encourage visitors.
Oh, absolutely. And the wine clubs and the wine trails, you know, are all, and we must have at least. Grant, how many do we have? We have about 10 wine trails, don't we? We got Shenandoah,
right.
Norfolk.
And by wine trails, or go this way and you'll hit all these wineries.
Yes, and all the wineries, you know, have got their little passports and so forth, and that encourages it. I mean, you can see a flood of people on Friday night leaving Washington, D.C., going out for about two-hour drives out to the countryside for the B&Bs, and then, you know, on Saturday, they're visiting the wineries and having a dinner out there, and then they come back on Sunday. Watch out for traffic on I-66 on Friday night.
So that's, you know, we can be so Sonoma-centric.
People love wine. It happens in other areas, and you know the wineries are there, and then they generate business for B&Bs and for restaurants
and
so
farm stands and farming,
absolutely, yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, it makes total sense with this focusing on local.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, many of the farms in Virginia, particularly after tobacco was taken out, struggled. And this is a high-value crop in that area, and then brings the other development that you spoke about. It's really expanding.
So tobacco has really decreased.
Oh, absolutely.
Tobacco is virtually gone.
Really?
In Virginia and in Maryland, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maryland has about, our neighbor has about 45, 46 wineries now.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, a smaller geographical area, but nice place to visit, you know, right over there on the Chesapeake. You know,
yeah.
If you like seafood, you can have some of the Pinot Grigio that goes that's grown in the center of the state.
Or this one that I liked so with that for the Albarino, that is just a fabulous seafood one. What about other? I mean, this might not be a fair question, but I'll throw it out there in case it is. Other farming, other foods coming from the region of Virginia. Can we talk about that at all?
I'm not that familiar with it.
That's okay.
No. I'm familiar with going out with the restaurants and eating it.
Yes.
You know, how it's made, yes. I don't know.
The local war movement is quite strong, frankly, around the D.C. area, and a lot of the chefs at the better restaurants are sourcing from the nearby areas. You see a lot more sustainable practices at many farms because that can sell at a premium in that sort of area. So it's not as widespread as some areas in California, but it is substantial, particularly around the urban areas that to be able to supply those kinds of restaurants.
Uh-huh. And I know, I mean, it always seems to me that one of the hurdles to get over is just a shorter growing season because the weather's harsher.
Well, that's right. It's not too bad in Virginia. Uh-huh. What you have the problem with there is rain. On the West Coast, you don't have that much. You do a lot by by irrigation.
We'll take some of yours.
Well, that's it.
It's bad to send it to you.
It's always been one of the challenges, both for winemakers, because the rain's unpredictable, and you're not irrigating, so when it comes or doesn't come can affect how you deal with things. But the same is true for certain more sensitive vegetables.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's been, California is just crazy. I mean, drought, El Nino.
We got your snowpack here this last weekend. Took me 4 days to get out of D.C. because we had over between 24 and 36 inches. The airport was closed for 3 days.
Oh, I was reading all about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Grant and I were involved in that.
Oh, really? So
tried to get out.
Had you been at the airport and then you just had to go
home? No, they canceled me 3 days in a row.
They canceled you.
I finally got to the airport. And then I didn't have a seat. So I had to buy one.
What? You had to buy?
Yeah.
You had a ticket but no seat?
I had a ticket but no seat.
And
so you had to buy one of the Economy Plus or First Class. No, I didn't go First Class. It was Economy Plus.
Oh, so you had to upgrade to it.
I had to upgrade, But, I mean, at least I got out of town. I mean, I'm sure it was better than a lot of other people. I mean, thousands of flights were.
Oh, I remember a good friend of mine was in New York. It's been a while now, but it was a really bad blizzard. Mm-hmm. He lived in San Francisco. He couldn't get out, and he almost didn't get a hotel room. He was actually at the airport. I think he was on a plane sitting on the tarmac for 8 hours.
Oh.
They finally let people off. He came. This is my friend John Boland, who is president of KQED, and I don't think he was then. I think he was then working for San Francisco Focus Magazine. But he finally got into Manhattan. He got one of the last hotel rooms. Yeah. And I don't think I've ever conversed with him more because there was nothing for him to do except go to an internet cafe and send emails to everyone.
I think the airlines will handle it very well. They knew it was coming. They knew it was coming. So I got advance notice, that I was going to be canceled, and they rebooked me. And they thought they were going to clear the roads in enough time, and they didn't get it. I think the airlines, and all credit to them, they handled it very well.
Very good. And you're here.
I'm here, yes.
And you're here. Well, one thing, because we're almost out of time, I'm wondering, do you know about Virginia Dare Winery here in
Kaiserville? Yes. I want to visit that before I go back there.
Oh, good. Yes. Well, they're going to be our guests next week. We're going to have the winemaker, and then we're going to have Coppola's vineyard manager. I'm so sorry. I forget her last name. First name, Lise, L-I-S-E. And it's interesting because they're focusing on American wine, old American winemaking.
Mm-hmm.
And Virginia Dare, of course, the name comes from an old ghost story.
That's right.
So we're going to be featuring them next week, and we will have music by the very sweet San Francisco band, Virginia Dare. So,
there's a San Francisco band?
And the reason that I was, because when they first did the winery, they didn't release the name. Mm-hmm. And they did this whole thing of the mystery of the white dove. Look it up. And I mean, Francis Coppola is just so creative and inventive. And so there were all these little clues on the bottles. And it's like, oh, Virginia Dare. I have that album. Mm-hmm. And the woman singer played either an Otto Harp or a zither. And it has this,
my God, who plays
it has this old America sound, but they're very young. Mm-hmm. And they did this very silly song, Johnny Depp Saves All His Love for Me. And it's that old style. And on that note, thank you so much. Another Atlantic Seaboard One Association. And we'll be back this time next year.
Thank you very much, Michelle. We look forward to it again. Thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to show you some of the wines and quality stuff that we produce on the Atlantic Seaboard.
Thanks to all of you. Thank you very much, Annie. And I'll see you next week.